This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 726. Thank you so much for joining me today, as we are going to talk with our guest today about solo Ks or solo 401Ks. So I think that'll be an interesting topic for you. You know, most of you listening, if not all of you, want to self-direct your retirement funds, and I think that is a very good thing. However, I just have to say that I don't think retirement accounts are quite as great as the financial services industry would have us believe. I think they're kind of okay, not great. I think they are definitely something you want to self-direct. God forbid you don't want to be investing them into all of those mediocre to terrible Wall Street assets. Stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. Because Wall Street is the modern version of organized crime, as we all know. So, yeah, you want to get control of these funds. You want to self-direct them. However, you know, there's a small school of thought, which I agree with to some extent. You know, I used to always want to maximize my pension plan every year, my IRA and my solo 401k. And I used to always want to do that. Every year I wanted to do that. And now I'm just not that keen on it. It you know, it's all right. The whole idea that your dollars can grow tax deferred and so forth, and that's certainly a neat idea. But you know, you can't get the really good financing inside of your plan. You can't get as much leverage. You know, I love leverage. It's a very, very powerful tool. You've got to use it with some respect, no question about it. Many people have gotten themselves into a little trouble with leverage. But honestly, that whole idea that leverage cuts both ways, as I have explained many, many times on prior episodes and at my live events, is kind of a myth, in my humble opinion. Kind of a myth. It really doesn't cut both ways because, of course, the implicit nuclear option, the backdoor option, if everything goes to hell and a handbasket, as the old saying goes, I wonder if Sarah says it like that. She might have her own way of saying it. Hell in a stroller or something like that. I don't know. She would invent a new way to say it. Sarah, are you listening? That's kind of an inside joke for you regular listeners. You know what I'm talking about when I say that. Anyway, if everything really collapses, then the nuclear option is to simply give the property back. Hey, that's what the contract says. That's the business deal you enter into with any lender. They either get the money or they get the property. That's the deal. That's what the contract says. So you have choices. Just understand that. Millions and millions of people made that exact choice during the Great Recession. And some are still making it today. People are always making that choice over the years, over the decades. So that's always out there. So I don't really think leverage cuts both ways the way a lot of the pundits would have us believe about it. But in either case, just understand that. And speaking of the bankers, I mean the banksters, you know, those crooks. I do love some of the products and services that banks offer, of course, but wow, you know, the banksters, as they say, remember that term became very popular during the Great Recession, not bankers, banksters, like gangsters. And of course, they got all the bailouts. They took all our tax dollars and our money that our government prints and creates out of thin air that causes upward inflationary pressure, pressure on prices, right? And that basically is the hidden tax, the liar and the thief that is pickpocketing us all the time, devaluing our savings account, the cash in our pocket or our purse, the bank accounts we have, our checking account, our stock accounts, our bonds. Hopefully we don't own any of that junk, but if we do, it's devaluing that, and it's always under attack by a government and a Federal Reserve, and governments and federal reserves, plural, there's only one of those, but central banks around the world are always playing this game. And what we need to do, of course, is align our interests with them. These are the most powerful entities the human race has ever known, so don't fight it. And there's an old saying, if you can't beat them, join them. Well, we're not going to join them by getting into their crookery and their scummy, shameful behavior like Wells Fargo. Yes. Have you read about this in the news? You probably have. Well, there's more to it, as they say, and I'll share that with you in just a moment. But we want to just align our interests with them, and that's why we want to use leverage, that very powerful tool, in our real estate investing career so that we can grow faster, we can reduce risk, we can take advantage of inflation-induced debt destruction, and so many other benefits. Because remember, here's something I may not have mentioned in this way before. So I'll mention it in this way now. And what that is the idea that, of course, when you buy a property and you put, say, 20% down, of course, you get a 4-to-1 leverage ratio. You increase your power, if you will, your size, if you will, by 500%. You're 500% larger, 5 times larger than you would be if you did not use leverage, of course, because you're only putting 20% into the deal. The bank is putting in the rest. Well, did you ever notice, of course, you get control of the property. You get, even though you only put 20% in, you get 100% of the appreciation. You get 100% of the rental income, and you also get 100% of the tax benefits in the most tax-favored asset class in America, so long as you can qualify for all of them. And that is an incredibly powerful thing. I haven't really mentioned, I don't think much before, or at least not in that way, about the 100% of the tax benefits. So again, no wonder income property is the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. And income property in the good old US of A is pretty darn special. It just does not compare around the world. The USA, the good old US of A, as mismanaged and as effed up as it is. See, did I get your attention when I sort of tempt you and make you think I'm going to swear? As effed up as it is still a pretty good place for real estate investors, to be sure. Well, Wells Fargo, one of the banksters out there, right? As Wells Fargo pays up. Now, remember, last week you may have read or heard in the news that Wells Fargo had to pay, what was it? A $185 million fine. Well, hey, instead of editorializing, let me just read you a little bit of this article. Now, this is a Newser article. It says, as Wells Fargo pays up, executive exits with $125 million. Hilarious, right? You can't make this stuff up, folks. It's like the lefty news media. Yeah, can't make some of the stuff up they come up with. It really blows your mind every day. Okay, it says, Wells Fargo has been fined $185 million over a scam that involved employees opening phony accounts for customers who were forced to pay fees, but the executive in charge of those employees will take home almost as much. Carrie Tolstedt, is that how you pronounce that? Carrie Tolstedt, she is the former head of community banking. Sounds like a nice title, community banking. $125 million package for not doing her job, I guess, right? Will receive $124.6 million in shares, options, and restricted stock when she abandons ship at the end of the year. The bank announced her retirement in July before the scam was revealed, reports Fortune. It goes on to say, it can reclaim pay from executives linked to wrongful behavior, but says it won't do that with Tolstead. It isn't clear that she was aware of the scam, though she ran the retail banking and credit card divisions from 2008. Isn't it funny how all of these people just get to say they weren't aware? Wow. Of something this major, this significant, right? And I think, how many... Gosh, I can't remember offhand because I don't have that article in front of me from when it came out last week, but I think it was like 5,300 or 53,000, I don't know how many it was, fake ghost accounts, right? Or number of customers that was affected. Maybe there were more accounts than that. I may have mentioned that last week on the show, but you can find it in the news, okay? So a Wells Fargo rep tells CNBC that community banking executives worked to, quote, significantly strengthen, unquote, the bank's training, monitoring, oversight, and compensation structure to combat the accounts scam. The bank says her retirement was a, quote, oh, you gotta love this, personal decision, unquote. While CEO John Stumpf, I guess, praised Tolstad in July as, quote, one of our most valuable Wells Fargo leaders, a standard bearer of our culture, a champion for our customers, and a role model for responsible, principled, and inclusive leadership, unquote. In 2014, Wells Fargo cited strong cross-sell ratios in justifying Tolstad's $1.7 million salary. She took home $9 million last year as a reward for continued growth in primary checking customers, reports CNN Money. This is absolutely disgusting! Are you not disgusted at these banksters? Do you feel any obligation to them? I sure hope you don't. It's part of the criminal enterprise known as Wall Street, the modern version of organized crime. Of course, banking is a huge part of Wall Street, if not Wall Street itself. Okay. Rent-to-value ratios, look, you all know better than this, right? This is a good deal. If you live anywhere in the San Francisco area, I have got a deal for you. You ready for this one? This is actually a really good deal. Another Newser article, it says, you can live in the full house for $14,000 a month. It's up for rent. Now, full house, what is that, a TV show or something? Yes, it is, right? I don't think I've ever seen it. But the full house is now available to rent for $13,950 a month, according to the AP. And the San Francisco Chronicle reports that in 1883, the 1883 villa, so it's old, it's a lot older than the homes you buy through our network, right, was put on the market in May with a $4.15 million price tag. But it didn't sell, so now they're renting it for $14,000 a month. It's 2,985 square feet, and it has 3 bedrooms and 3.5 baths. Wow. That's all you get for $4.15 million? Well, I guess you don't get it because it didn't sell. But you can rent it for $14,000 a month. Is that a good deal, listeners? Yes, it is a good deal because the rent-to-value ratio is very favorable to the tenant. If you're going to invest $4 million or $4.15 million in real estate, how much do I want you to get in income every month, in gross income and gross rents? You know the answer. I want you to get $41,500, or hopefully even better than that. Somewhere around that. They're not even close. You're getting a huge discount when you rent a high-end property. That is a great deal for the renter and a terrible deal for the owner. So check it out. Okay. Also, check out HartmanEducation.com. We added another course, and a better deal to the HartmanEducation.com package because we bundled another course in there, and that was my Creating Wealth seminar. It took quite a while to edit that one, but Creating Wealth is like my core content. That's the seminar that I've been doing for 12 years. I've had thousands and thousands and thousands of people attend that event, and hey, it's really good. It's kind of my core fundamental content. You can check it out at HartmanEducation.com, and you can check out some of my other products there as well, HartmanEducation.com. And let's get to our guest and learn about Solo K's. It's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Nabors to the show. He is the creator of the Solo 401k. We're going to talk today about solo Ks, solo 401ks, how independent contractors, entrepreneurs, and business people can set up a self-directed plan here much more easily than they might think. We're also going to dive into Roth IRAs and Roth conversions from traditional IRAs, whether or not that makes sense. And so this episode will be useful to employees who are in 401k jail, as we call it sometimes, and entrepreneurs and independent contractors as well. Jeff, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
Well, I'm based out of Scottsdale, but right now we are doing our summer in Italy.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm in Lake Garda, Italy.
Ah, good stuff. Well, I happen to be in very hot Scottsdale myself. That's funny. We're from the same town. I didn't even know that. You are actually the creator of the Solo 401k. I have one of these, and I heard about it before I heard about you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, the Wall Street guys have their own version of a solo 401k, and they call it the same thing. But the self-directed solo 401k is something that we pioneered. Back when I first got into real estate investing, when I owned a mortgage business, I started noticing that, you know, a lot of real estate investors, they really liked real estate, and then they'd have IRA and 401k funds stuck in that kind of Wall Street jail, so to speak. And they either didn't know that the retirement funds could go into real estate investments, or they just didn't know how. So when I got into it, it was really all about self-directed IRAs. Then the laws were updated, and it made possible this self-directed solo 401k.
Okay, so the first part of what you said, Jeff, is really just a discussion, which we've had many guests on the show talking about it, and we're going to delve into that too, but I want to save that for later in the episode, about self-directed plans, about self-directed IRAs. But the distinction here that's really important is the 401k or solo K aspect of it, right? And when you said you owned a mortgage company, started noticing this, and the law changed, give us a sense of time here. What year are you talking about?
Well, the law that made the solo 401k possible was called EGTRA, or the Economic Growth Tax Reconciliation Something Act.
EGTRA, I'm sure everybody can remember that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, we need more acronyms, right? Well, that right. was passed in 2000, went into effect in 2001. But when the solo 401k really got its full powers was based on the Pension Protection Act of 2006. And when that happened, it made it possible to roll over your pre-existing retirement funds into a solo 401k, putting it on the same footing as an IRA that, of course, can accept a rollover.
Explain that a little more.
Yeah. So, self-directed IRAs are pretty common talking point, things to think about, common tools to use.
They are in our crowd. I mean, they're not in the mainstream, but in a crowd of real estate investors listening to this show, they're common. You're right. But the mainstream, unfortunately, those people don't know, do they, Jeff?
No, they don't. And, yeah. You know, it's a great head start to be familiar with a self-directed IRA. What there is to learn about the solo 401k on it is, like, you know, how it differs from a self-directed IRA. There are really three main differences that are advantages. And the first one is, for a real estate investor who likes to increase their diversification and aim to increase their profits by using mortgage financing. So a lot of real estate investors like to use mortgage financing. If you're putting, 20% down, then you can buy five times as many properties with leverage than you can just paying cash. So when people do that with a self-directed IRA, they incur a special tax called UDFI, or unrelated debt financed income. And when, in my experience, most self-directed IRA investors that incur this tax don't even know it. Their CPA doesn't even know it. And it's just at some point down the road, they're going to get a surprise and owe a bunch of back taxes and late penalties and interest. And
how bad is that, Jeff? Give us a sense of that. Because I mean, you know what has just shocked me as an adult, as a business person, I'm just going to say it, how frickin' stupid some of these CPAs and lawyers are, and the kind of mistakes they make. I mean, it's always just ends up being the client's responsibility, you know? Of course, I guess it has to be, right? But it's mind-boggling to me that these people, they pass tests, they, you know, like the bar, and they don't know anything. It's crazy.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a woman this morning, and when she was giving me her backstory, she said, I've been educating my CPA for the past 3 years, and we're almost ready to do something here. And I thought, well, how much is he paying you? You know, but oddly enough, that is the case. These licensed professionals, the license is supposed to convey expertise. But I agree with you. As we've moved from the industrial age to the information age, some of them haven't kept up with the changes. And, you know, you need a good one when you do need one.
Okay. I think we got the frustration about the professionals out there. Continue with what you were saying.
Yeah. So that special tax that applies to a self-directed IRA that uses mortgage financing. So that tax, how severe it is, depends on how much leverage you use. You know, and if you're doing a profitable deal, the way it's, you know, should work is the more leverage you use, the more profit you'll have. But then the more leverage and profit you have, the more tax you'll have. So the main, you know, kind of bottom line of it is, if you think about a traditional IRA, you remember you're going to pay taxes when you pull the money out later in retirement. And so the most important thing to understand about this special self-directed IRA tax is it's double taxation. And in most cases, when you have double taxation, you're going to end up with less money for you in your pocket and in your retirement years than you would have if you would have just not had an IRA in the first place. So the point of an IRA is to give you tax advantages, and you basically lose those when you do mortgage financed real estate deals in a self-directed IRA. Bringing it back around, apples to apples, in a solo 401k, it's just exempt from that tax.
Like, they tax you on the leverage you use, or they tax you because you accelerated your return? That's just hard for me to get my head around. What's wrong with using leverage? Now, one of the problems using leverage inside a plan is that you can't use as much, and it's never as favorable. The interest rates are always higher, the deal's less desirable, the loan-to-value ratio is lower, et cetera. Everybody listening who's tried this knows it. But hey, if you can buy two properties instead of one, it's still great. And we all love leverage for that reason. It allows us to do more and look bigger, if you will, than we really are. So it gives us a head start. It gives us an edge. But how much do they tax you on that, if you happen to know? I don't mean to put you on the spot. I mean, you know, asking someone if they know the tax code is, and you're not even a tax professional, so.
Yeah, it is pretty complicated, but I'll give you a simple example. If you use 50% leverage and put 50% down, then 50% of your profits on a cash flow basis each year are going to be subject to trust tax rates. That's the most aggressive tax schedule in the tax code. And 50% of your appreciation and gains, if you resell the property, will be subject to that same tax. Now, the flip side is once you're...
But it's inside the plan. So it's in this tax-deferred vehicle. So what does that mean? You don't pay the tax till you take distributions, or how do you do that?
No, you pay the tax right then. Your CPA is going to have to file a tax return that they probably have never heard of.
Oh my God. And the plan has to pay the tax, right?
Yeah. So what's happening is you get taxed when you make the profit, which is kind of the whole idea of an IRA, is it won't have to do that. Well, then you have to do that, but then you'll get double taxed again when you distribute that out later in retirement. So it's not a complete future crusher, but we need every dollar we can get. We need every benefit we can get. And what that means is, for a real estate investor who does have access to a solo 401k, going through the, you know, door number two of the solo 401k instead of door number one of a self-directed IRA is going to mean they just don't have to deal with the tax. They don't have to deal with the tax form. They don't have to deal with finding a new CPA who will know how to do the tax form. The CPA won't have to spend the 15 or 20 hours doing the, because then there's going to be depreciation and other things they're going to try to take. It's pretty complex. But, you know, kind of the rule of thumb is when a tax is optional, choose no. When it's legally optional, and a solo 401k makes it legally an option to not pay that double taxation.
Okay. Wow. Very interesting. Okay. So just in the backing up here for a moment in the broader spectrum, I want to make sure I just ask you and make sure we get the sort of more broad question out. How is a solo 401k different from a traditional or a Roth IRA? I mean, it's different in who it's for, right?
Yeah. Well, in terms of who can access it, there are two qualifications. So we'll cover who can access it, and then for those who can access it, what will it do above and beyond an IRA? Well, who can access it is a two-part qualification process. One part is you have to have some sort of business activity. If you're a real estate agent and you get your 1099, then that is business activity. If you're a freelancer, if anybody writes you a check out to your name to do any kind of work, then you're, you know, basically an independent contractor or a freelancer, and that creates the required business activity. Also, if you own more of a formal like C corporation, LLC, S corporation, that will qualify you. That's one part of it. The second part is you just can't have full-time W-2 employees. That means someone who works for you for over 1,000 hours per year and gets a W-2.
Half a year,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. So is that because you'd have to put them in the plan or because you just can't have them at all?
Right. Yeah. Well, you'd have to give them access to the same everything. And when it comes to alternative investments, it's basically a bureaucratic nightmare that isn't worth it. Then that would send you back to an IRA if you have full-time employees would be better.
And let me share with my listeners a lesson I learned many years ago. The government doesn't want you to employ anybody because they make it so difficult. You know, it's mind-boggling how they disincentivize something that should be really good for the economy and really good for everybody, employ a lot of people. Government makes it so difficult in so many ways, but that's just my editorializing and complaining there. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. There are so many incentives. Everything is so much leaner, simpler, and it's not just for a business owner. It's also for the staff member or the team member, the worker. I believe they have the incentive too, to be an independent contractor. They can start deducting things from their taxes. They could have a solo 401k too. I'm a strong believer in independent contractorship whenever legitimately possible.
Yeah, definitely. But let me tell you, Jeff, this is going the other way. I hear the tide is turning in a very negative direction for everybody. And it was really led by the ride sharing world, because the Uber and the Lyft type companies out there that have been fighting the battle of independent contractor versus employee, word has it that the government is really going in the wrong direction on this. And they're going to try and take a big swath of these independent contractors out there in the country and turn them into employees. They're going to make it tougher. That's what I have been reading. So watch out, folks. That's coming, and it will create more unemployment than the government's infinite wisdom, right?
But yeah, the unintended consequences are yet again.
Yes. You know, it's the Bernie Sanders folks out there that do this kind of stuff. But okay, so here's the thing I think a lot of my listeners might be thinking about, Jeff. They might be thinking, well, look, I have my corporate job. I got my day job. I'm making good money. I want to leave it. And that's why I'm interested in real estate investing. But that's really a 5 or a 7 or a 10 year plan because of the speed at which they can afford to build their portfolio. And, you know, what if I just have a little business on the side that maybe I work a couple hours during the week, a couple hours on the weekends? You know, it's maybe a little internet marketing business, or I call it a real estate investing business. And I do something like that on the side. Will that qualify? Can I get a solo K, a solo 401k for that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things that a lot of people are kind of worried about that are nothing to worry about is, number one, it can be a side activity. You could be full-time. You could be over-employed. You could be working 70 hours a week at your job. But if you do still have
over-employed,
some, yeah, you could. But if you still have your side business activity, all you have to do is have the presence of that without being a W-2 full-time employer to others. And your spouse can be employed, though. That they are considered an owner employee, which is okay. You can be employed, or you can receive a W-2 paycheck from your own business if you have it set up that way. And it definitely can be on the side. You could even participate in your 401k at your job and continue to participate in your solo 401k on the side.
Okay, but the contributions are going to be limited to what we earn from that side business, I assume, right?
Yeah, partially. So the solo 401k will allow you to contribute a total of up to $59,000 a year. And the part of that that is going to be limited based on your regular job contributions will be the first about $18,500. So it doesn't mean that you can't contribute into your solo 401k. It just means that if you max out your solo or your 401k at work, it might subtract a little bit from what you could contribute into your solo 401k.
Okay. And you said 18,000 was the limit?
Yeah, 18,500 is what's known as your employee contribution.
Okay, but how much, well, I want you to finish what you're saying, but based on what income is that 18,500? Where does that derive?
Yeah, that'll be coming right out of your self-employment income. So in your example, if you've got somebody who is doing a little bit of internet marketing on the side, they can contribute the income that they make from that internet marketing business into their solo 401k. But they can also roll over any money that's in an IRA, any money that's in a past employer 401k, 403b, 457, any of those kinds of plans. And in some cases, their current employer, it's becoming more and more common for employers to allow their employees to roll over their money before they retire or get fired or quit.
Interesting. Okay. So what else haven't I asked you so far that you want people to know?
Well, the big thing is in the real estate game, if you look at how the IRS views what a real estate investor is doing, some of it is passive investment activity, such as just hanging on to, say, a turnkey rental. And some things are really truly business activity, such as flipping multiple properties per year. And so in the thousands of real estate investors that I've had conversations with, you know, the majority of real estate investors really have both sides. And where a self-directed IRA is kind of limited is it's really made only for the passive investment activity. And what I see a lot of people doing is real estate investors, one of their greatest strengths is their creativity. But that creativity can get them into trouble. Sometimes when you break rules, you get rewarded. And sometimes when you break rules, you get punished. So the unspoken rule is you should put all of your money in Wall Street. And all of us real estate investors break that rule. And hopefully we get rewarded if we're good at it.
Wall Street is the modern version of organized crime.
Yeah, I preach it to the choir here. But then there are some special rules for retirement accounts. And they're very complicated. Almost nobody on the planet fully understands them. And some real estate investors inadvertently, completely innocently, and accidentally do what's called a prohibited transaction. And this is extra common in an IRA because they're trying to fit like a square peg in a circle hole. So they're trying.
Well, give us an example, because when you say it's made for buy and hold real estate, which, by the way, is my philosophy, and most of my listeners are into the buy and hold program, but occasionally we might do a flip. You can flip stuff in your IRA.
You can within limits.
In your self-directed IRA,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah, you can within very fuzzy and completely undefined limits. So the IRS, unfortunately, so far, has not come out and drawn the line anywhere. But most good attorneys will tell you that if you flip a few properties a year, that's probably okay. If you flip five or more, it's probably a business activity in the view of the IRS.
That's the difference between the dealer and the being defined as a business versus an investor, right? Okay, got it.
So that's one set of rules. There's another set of rules that basically talks about how if there's any potential conflict of interest created by you yourself or any of your relatives being involved in the transaction in any other way on the other side of it. This is where things get really complicated, okay? There's these complicated rules and people break them all the time and they don't realize it, and it's almost always an accident. But let me give you an example with some numbers.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about the arm's length rule, right?
Yeah, and to understand, you know, part of it that can be done by, you know, in just a moment of one example or one article. But there are literally thousands of variations, and the average real estate investor just really can't keep up with all of that. I've never seen anybody do a prohibited transaction on purpose. They always know about the rules and do their best to follow it, but then accidentally will find out, oh, you broke the rule. Well, if you, for example, have a $1 million self-directed IRA and you go buy a tax lien for $1,000 and in one way or another, you accidentally find out you broke one of the prohibited transaction rules in the way that you went about it. So the amount involved in the prohibited transaction is $1,000. But with a self-directed IRA, you've destroyed your entire $1 million IRA. Your IRA literally gets totally distributed, which that's like, all right, I'm getting the money. But the bad part is you're going to get taxed on the whole thing as if you just got $1 million paycheck this month. You'll get taxed.
But why did we get taxed? I mean, so we bought the tax lien. So what?
Well, in this example,
move into the house?
Yeah. Well, let's say that the tax lien is on a house that your relative lives in this example. And that's just kind of one example. It does get pretty complicated where honestly.
Yeah, but first of all, that would be such a long shot. I mean, nobody listening is going to do that. I'd hope, God. You know, so what you're saying is your uncle goes into foreclosure or because they're not paying their taxes. So, and then you go to the auction and pick up that tax lien and foreclose on your uncle. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one side of it. And so the thing is that...
That's not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very unlikely. What's more likely is that a different kind of transaction that gets a little bit more complicated that we probably wouldn't want to go into. But the reason I use that example is that no matter how small the amount involved is in an IRA, it blows up the whole IRA, creating hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. If it's done in a solo 401k, not that you want to do one, but if one is done accidentally, if it's in a 401k, the tax is applied only to the amount involved. So in one same transaction, same circumstances, the IRA tax consequences would be hundreds of thousands of dollars and the 401k consequences would be hundreds of dollars. Now, in reality, that's a very unrealistic example, but it just shows you that the rules and the penalties are much more severe with an IRA than they are with a 401k. So obviously you just want to do everything you can to avoid prohibited transactions. But if you ever accidentally do one, you're almost always going to be better off using a 401k and finding out that it happened. Your consequences will be lower. Your taxes and penalties will be a lot cheaper.
Okay. And you mean obviously a self-directed or solo 401k, right?
Yeah.
The laws are more lenient on those. That's your point.
Yeah, exactly. The penalties for accidentally breaking the rules are lower in a 401k than they are in an IRA.
All right. Okay.
A self-directed 401k than a self-directed IRA. If you have an IRA or a 401k in Wall Street, it's almost impossible to break one of these rules, but it's also almost impossible to get a lot of profit.
Yeah, it's all impossible to make any money.
Right.
That's the problem. Okay. Yeah. So did we wrap up this subject? I want to make sure you got everything out there because I want to ask you about the broader audience's question of, you know, traditional versus Roth IRA. Should they convert? Just I want to quickly touch on a couple of those issues and any tips you have for those kind of self-directed IRAs?
Yeah. So I think that in some cases, converting to a Roth, it's very powerful and in your favor. And in other cases, it's very powerful and in the government's favor. So generally speaking,
So you've got a traditional, here's who this is for. You've got a traditional IRA. Hopefully you've got it self-directed. So you're in charge of your own future and you're not relinquishing control to some Wall Street crook. Not that I'm pessimistic or cynical about this or anything. but you've got it under your own control. It's self-directed, but it's not a Roth. It's traditional. So in other words, what that means, and please correct me anywhere you need to, Jeff, is that you're going to pay taxes upon taking distributions when you're 59 and a half and you're going to be forced to at 70. But with a Roth, you convert it and pay the tax now and you don't pay tax later. That's the idea.
Right. It depends on the investment. I think the most powerful thing the person can do is to have some diversification among traditional and Roth as well. So, for instance, investments that have a really big upside potential with a small upfront investment are so ripe for the Roth because, you know, from an ROI perspective, that's going to be the biggest ROI. And if you can have your biggest ROI in Roth, then that means that you'll be getting the most tax benefits out of Roth. On the other hand, if you have just kind of a rental property chugging along, let's say it's under management and, you know, totally passive for you, that in many cases will look at first like a Roth will be better until you factor in inflation. And inflation is one of the most confusing concepts out there. Most, you know, like if you think about it, we file our tax returns every year. If you have a business, your CPA is doing your books, and not once does your tax returns or books do any calculation for inflation to show you what's happening there. So,
yeah, and sometimes that benefits you and sometimes it hurts you. The IRS does not recognize inflation. And I talk a lot about this, and you know, you could argue that inflation is fairly low now. It may be a real inflation rate of 3% or something like that, unless, God forbid, you're paying for college, healthcare, or any sort of asset like real estate or stocks, because the inflation has been really massive if you want to become an investor, and nobody considers that. It's not in the CPI, of course, and you know, strip out food and energy too. And there are all sorts of other sorts of inflation, smaller sizes, smaller portions at restaurants, we don't notice. So yeah, that's another discussion. But yes, the IRS does not recognize inflation correctly. So what else did you want to say about that? And that's an important point because most people don't ever think of that.
Yeah, so you're right. And the mainstream inflation figure is a little bit misleading because inflation affects different people. It depends on what you're going to spend your money on. Like you said, if someone is going into retirement, then healthcare is going to potentially be one of their expenses to pay attention to. And there's going to already, we see a trend of a lot of inflation there. If part of your wealth is going to go to pay for somebody's college, that's, you know, pretty much the highest inflation there is ever. So if we kind of put our crystal ball away for a second and just acknowledge that the money is being printed in Washington, D.C. on a constant and consistent basis, the general basis or the basic understanding would be to expect some, you know, moderately, potentially significant amount of inflation. And that's been the case so far. The value of the dollar has dropped by about 95% since it was created in its current form. And when you factor that in, for investments that just chug along, the net of inflation, the rule that seems to accumulate the most wealth is pay taxes later, which actually sends you back to the traditional IRA or 401k as opposed to the Roth. So my view and my philosophy is when factoring in inflation, you'll accumulate more if you pay taxes later. So here's how that works. Today's dollar, generally speaking, there's going to be fluctuations, but the general trend, today's dollar is going to be the strongest dollar you'll ever have. So you don't really want to pay taxes with today's dollar. You want to pay taxes with tomorrow's dollar, which will be worth less. So
even if the tax rate is higher, when you take those distributions from your traditional IRA, you still could win because you pay in later dollars that are cheaper, right?
Exactly.
That's your point of saying that.
Yeah, right? You might pay more dollars, but the fact that you're paying them that many years in the future might yield you more wealth and value in your life, more money for you to spend.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So what you're arguing there is do not convert. Leave your make sure your IRA is self-directed, definitely, but leave it as a traditional IRA, not a Roth. That's your point, right?
Well, my point is I'm against people haphazardly jumping into converting all of their money because of the idea that Roth is always better for everyone forever. Amen. I think if someone is going to convert, it should be done strategically. And the kind of conversions that make the most sense are when you're converting some money to be put into some investments with very strong upside. So if, you know, I'll give you an example. If you're an accredited investor, and you have access to private placements and pre-IPOs to, you know, buy Google or Facebook before they even went out into IPO. And
which some of those, by the way, could be as bad as a Wall Street investment or even worse, but go ahead.
Yes, I'm not promoting
so be
that.
Careful.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah, or let's say you're going to invest into somebody's real estate development project and the projected returns are, you know, put in 50K and that might turn into 5 million because, you know, real estate developing.
And good luck with that, by the way, but
yeah, go ahead. Yeah. But, you know, most people probably aren't going to have access to an investment like that. So if you had to paint it black or white, not converting to Roth is generally, I think, going to turn out better. But if you are going to convert, I would just convert some. Do it sparingly, because let's remember, converting doesn't just magically dump a bunch of money and tax benefits on you. It actually takes money away immediately. You got to pay those taxes right now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree.
And so to have more invested now means that you're going to have more accumulated in the future. And the later that you pay in taxes, the cheaper that tax bill will be because of inflation.
Absolutely. So it's really twofold. If you pay those taxes now, you have the opportunity cost of not having the use of that money inside your hopefully self-directed plan. So you can't invest with it if it's gone, right?
Right.
And if it's gone to the government. And then also the time value of money, the present value versus the future value. So very important points. I'm glad you mentioned those. There's one more I'd like to make. And this is why I have not converted, it's one of the reasons besides the one you mentioned. And it is, call me a conspiracy theorist, whatever you want here, call me paranoid, I don't care. But, you know, I think we have a government that is becoming very predatory. It's going into business, if you will, against its own citizens because it's hungry, it's broke. And you look at traffic tickets, parking tickets, DUIs, they're all businesses, okay? I mean, yes, they're for the public good. I totally get it. I don't want drunk drivers out there either or people parking, you know, like anarchy. But this is a business at the end of the day. It's a revenue stream for the government. And the government is becoming very good at being in business against its own citizens. I just got to think, the hungrier the government gets with all these unfunded entitlements and mandates we've got coming up over the next 10, 15 years, that Lawrence Kutlikoff, who's been on my show a couple times and has probably done the most extensive studies on these, calculates being around $220 trillion with a T, trillion dollars. There's no way the government can pay this. Maybe they'll just change the law, you know, because they're hungry. There's been a lot of talk that these various retirement plans of all types will be nationalized. Of course, that'll be for our own good because there will be some sort of crisis and people will lose money and the, you know, the government will step in and say, well, we got to take over because we're so good at managing everything, right? and then they will always look for the low-hanging fruit first. If you have a brokerage account, it's really simple to just pass a law saying that all those brokerage accounts need to be retitled in the name of maybe the holder and the government jointly or something like that. You know, I don't know how they'll do it mechanically, but if it's self-directed, all those assets will be fragmented. It'll be too hard for them to figure out, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's totally infeasible. They can't just do anything to your self-directed account with the stroke of a pen in Congress, you know? And you bring up a really good point, because if we go really zoom out just for a moment, maybe 30 seconds here, you know, not going to have income taxes, you know, does that ring a bell? That was how our country was founded, right? And then when they created Social Security, the promise was the benefits would never be taxed. Well, that turned around in the 80s, and it was because they have to. They need more revenue. Give them more, now they need even more. And you're right. The Roth promise is very alluring on paper, but over the long term, the government's going to have to tax where they said they wouldn't. And so you really don't want to put all of your chips on the Roth, because they might tax it. It's, you know, it's the precedent so far. If you and I, Jason, were to own a bank and somebody came in and they had a track record of never following through on their promises, we probably don't want to lend them money. Well, doing a Roth is kind of like lending the government money and saying, I'll give you taxes right now, but just don't hit me up for taxes later. Yeah, sure. Right. But a couple years later, a decade later, it's going to be a different story when all these unfunded liabilities that you were saying your friend was telling you about. I've seen similar numbers, definitely north of $150, $200 trillion. And to just put that into perspective,
it's at least $60 trillion. You know, that's at least what it is. And so, yeah, in perspective, that's about the GDP of the entire planet Earth. Okay, for 1 year, and it's four times the GDP of the U.S. if it's at the low number. So, yeah, it's insane.
Another very interesting context for that figure is that the total amount of money, of currency on the planet Earth, not just in the dollar, but in all currencies worldwide, total planet is about $85 trillion. So they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat that's more than all the money in the world.
Right. Yeah. Folks, it's really important that you know this stuff, because times, they are a-changing, as the famous quote goes. So don't depend on that Roth deal being the deal forever. I think that's very dangerous idea. Yeah. Okay. Jeff, good conversation here. Please give out your website. And can you tell us, what we didn't talk about is, how do you do this? I mean, what do you do? And what does your company offer? Are you like do you offer sort of a do-it-yourself way to do this? Or what do you do?
Yeah. So we created the only complete solo 401k solution. Over a decade ago, when we started setting up solo 401ks for people, we've always done it in the way where you're your own custodian. There's no middleman. You have that checkbook control. You have, there's no company that can tell you that you can't do your transaction. There's nobody messing things up for you.
Well, but there is the IRS telling you you can't do it, but they're only going to tell you after the fact. So be careful with that.
Yeah. And you want to have that control so that whatever the IRS does, you can respond with whatever options are best for you, rather than just have your hands tied behind your back. But, you know, when we started out, we would just set people up with documents and send them a binder. And what we started finding after a few years of that is we would follow up with people and find out that they still really didn't know how to use it. So we went ahead and did some trailblazing, and every single year that we've been in business, we've been making our solo 401k solution better and better and better. And so what that means is, for instance, we talked earlier about like the prohibited transactions that can cost a bunch of taxes and penalties. We took all of the complicated tax code that almost nobody fully understands. We're talking the IRS side, the Department of Labor, ERISA laws. We're collaborating with the Government Accountability Office right now to create a report for Congress, dealing with the legislators. It's so confusing. And what we did is we took the best minds who understand all this stuff, and we created a transaction checker so that when you have a solo 401k with us, that means you just log into your account online and check your transaction for problems before you ever do it. and it'll show you a red flag. It'll tell you how to fix it or tell you that it can't be fixed. Just don't do it or do it outside your plan.
Or do it at your own risk.
Yeah. Well, you can always do it at your own risk. But I don't find a lot of people who really want to shoot themselves in the foot. If they do shoot themselves in the foot, it's because they don't realize that they're doing it. So we make it just really easy to use. You want to make a contribution, you just log in and click contribution.
Okay. So yeah, fantastic. So your thing is an online tool then, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if people have questions? Can they call? Do people answer the phone or is it strictly online? And tell us how much that costs. That's really interesting.
Yeah, the setup fee for getting one set up is $19.95. And the annual fee is $347.
So $2,000 mm-hmm. basically to set it up and then $347 a year.
Exactly.
Okay. And what is that annual fee for? What do you do for that?
So traditionally with 401ks, you need to pay an attorney $10,000 or $20,000 to keep it qualified so that you know you're getting the tax benefits. And that's mainly a matter of following the latest things of the IRS changed and updated and creating documents to be on the right side of it and, you know, defend the powers and take advantage of new opportunities. So there's an ongoing document maintenance that is occurring. And so instead of having to pay $10,000 or $20,000 like a normal company would for a 401k to keep everything maintained, we do that for you. It's a lot simpler with a solo 401k, so the costs are a lot lower. And you end up having an IRS opinion letter that you can depend on, so that saying, hey, your plan is IRS approved and that you're in part of our document system. So it's basically like, you know, like people are familiar with Groupon. Everybody goes in to buy an offer and it gets a lot cheaper with the group buying power. So with us, the group buying power means that you can have the best solo 401k system without the huge costs. So the $347 a year keeps your plan qualified, keeps your documents up to date. In the average year, we have a couple little pieces of paper to sign to keep your 401k totally compliant and as powerful as it can be.
Yeah, good stuff. Did you give out your website?
No, it's solo401k.com. And also, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And what we have also for your listeners is a demo, and they can access the demo at solo401k.com/creating-wealth. Once they access the demo and sign up for that, which is free, they'll also have an area where they can reach out to us and ask a question or set up a time to speak with a specialist. We're real humans. We love talking to investors who are looking to make their futures better and take more control over their lives. This is something that we're super passionate about. We walk the walk. Everything we talk about, we do ourselves personally too. So it's not just a call center of, you know, some random people. We're all self-directed solo 401k investors. So you can speak with a specialist. You can check out a demo. Those are some really great next steps that you can take.
Good stuff. Jeff Nabors, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.